Welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. In this podcast, we talk about books, interview authors, and we discuss their journey to becoming published. Each one has a different but amazing story. My hope is to encourage people to keep reading good books and to help authors find their audience and inspire everyone in their journey, whatever that might be. Welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. Today I have a special guest with us. Her name is Anne Seidel, and she has just written a book that kind of has me a little worried. It's called Bullet Through the Art. So I don't know if she's out targeting me or, although looking at the cover, I think maybe it's the wrong kind of art. Or in this case, the right one. Anyway, it's a cozy mystery. It's the first in the series of the Sam Gordon Cozy Mystery series. So Anne, looking forward to chatting with you tonight and getting to know you a little more and your journey to becoming an author. So welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This will be fun.
You're a new author. This is your first full novel published.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the novel itself is about?
Yeah. So Sam Gordon is 26, and she was she's been traveling around Europe mostly, but she gets called home to help her aunt who's been injured. And surprise, surprise, there's a dead body. Mm-hmm. And Sam would probably let the police handle it, except when she discovered it, while she was waiting for the police, she takes some video. And later on, when she's flipping through, she sees that the man has a tattoo that was exactly like her dad's, who passed away when she was 13. Mm. And so she's very curious about that and can't not investigate on her own. Yeah. So she's come home after a long time. She was raised by her aunt and an uncle, which was really her dad's best friend. And so we get to meet her sort of maid family, her best friends. And it's very much kind of Scooby-Doo, Nancy Drew, mm-hmm. but in a more contemporary setting. And there's actually no pets.
Oh, no. No, just kidding.
Yeah. So there's really no Scooby to the, but she definitely is Scooby sure. gang. And yeah, so there's, it's very lighthearted murder mystery. I know it sounds kind of contradictory, but
right.
that's kind of the cozy way, right? So it's really fun. I hope there's enough twists in there for people. I'm getting some good feedback. And I think the relationships and the fun with the relationships is really what draws people in. Although there's some really good mysteries going on. There's an mm-hmm. A and a B. So I think there's plenty to keep people interested.
Excellent. Yeah, it's funny. You know, the whole concept of a cozy murder mystery is, I think that's what I like about it, is the two extremes. You know, you have murder, but then you have a real cozy atmosphere. You know, it's, I was talking about a previous episode. I was talking about a Christmas based murder mystery, and somebody had commented on the podcast comment page. Anyway, they said, you know, I really enjoyed this, but it was strange talking about Christmas and murder at the same time, you know.
It is true. There's a group of us that are, we write together. We do sprints together weekly, mm-hmm. and we critique each other's stories as we're writing. And we did a Christmas anthology last year. It's not available in ebook anymore. It's only available in paperback. So there was 8 stories and we each wrote one. And while we were kind of writing it, putting it together and discussing each other's, you know, if you have like a struggle with a plot line or something, mm-hmm. and it would be this weird thing where we'd stop and think, man, I hope nobody's listening to this. I mean, it would probably take them just a few minutes to realize, oh, authors, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about, okay, well, if you kill them this way, will that change what happens later on? Because you planted this clue. It's just, it's hysterical, some of the conversations we have. And to have it be taking place at Christmas, mm-hmm. My Christmas Story. And talk about a lighthearted story, but it actually kind of has a little bit of a harsher title. It's called Slayed in a Manger.
No.
And because that the dead body is found in this sort of giant life-size display.
Yeah.
And we got the rights back, and I was going to try to, there was some things I wanted to fix in it before I released it. And I just couldn't get it done in time to do a Christmas release this year. But I kept thinking, should I change the title? But I don't know, I kind of like it. And I just, you know, anyway, it's one of those things where you think, because like you said, murder, Christmas, you know, right. kind of way.
Right.
But because it's a very lighthearted.
I think.
Capery.
Right. I think for the most part, cozy readers understand that, you know.
Yes. Yes. They're pros.
I like the title personally, so I think that's great. One thing I've found holds true is that many writers are often good readers. So what kind of a reader are you, and what kind of books do you enjoy reading?
I'm an eclectic reader. I like to read all kinds. Now I read kind of a mix between cozy mystery, because there's so many different flavors of cozy mystery. Mine is sort of very straightforward, contemporary. There's not magic or pets or like a specialty hobby. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't knit. She's not a baker. In fact, she doesn't really cook. And when she tries, it is disastrous. And her best friend is a cook and a baker, and she owns a cafe and keeps wanting to teach her how to cook. And she's like, but why? I can just go to the cafe.
Right.
So it's very, so I read a lot of those, but because I am a new author and I am learning sort of the business side and the marketing side. So I'm also reading a lot of educational books on all of that, but I love reading the last couple of books I've read. I guess they would be considered, I mean, they're mystery, but I guess they'd sort of fall into the thriller or suspense subgenre. The last one that was not cozy mystery was Clark and Division by Naomi Hirahara. And she has another book that came out that's, I haven't read it yet. It's literally, I can see it over there. It's just sitting on this stack of books that I have waiting for me to read. And then a dark fantasy retelling of of Santa Claus, of old St. Nick, by an author named A.P. Beswick. And he's doing kind of he's got a whole series of dark fantasy retellings of British folklore. Mm-hmm. So the first one was Robin Hood, and it's really good. I should say those two I read via audiobook because I work a full-time job. So trying to fit in reading, writing, day job, just regular stuff, I have to try to. So I do a mix of audio and well, Kindle and paperback. Mm-hmm. So I hit all of the, all
yeah.
of the formats.
Yeah. I hear people discuss online all the time about, I like Kindle, or I like real books better. And, you know, is that really reading or not? And I'm over here saying, I like it all. I don't care. Yeah.
If you're telling a good story, I want to hear it. I want to read it. However I read it, whether it's Kindle or so when I'm traveling, Kindle, so easy. I mean, that's the e-reader that I have. But if you have Nook or Kobo, any of those readers, I can't imagine trying to carry, you know, with all the luggage limitations you have nowadays, I can't imagine trying to carry books to read like you used to, you know. I can remember both my parents, when we would go on vacation as kids, had at least a couple of books in their suitcase. That won't happen these days, because you're not checking a bag, you're in a carry-on, and you need every ounce of square inch you can get to pack it all in. But yeah, so definitely ebook in that case, but audio is great for that too. I'll listen on a plane instead of watching a movie, because I oftentimes watching a movie is just hard for me, especially coming back from a conference, because there's just too much going on in my head.
Right.
But I love audio. Taking a walk, if I hike. Yeah.
Yep. I really got into audio around 2019, 2020 in there. And of course, with the pandemic coming along, there was nothing else to do. So, and now I've been keeping track of my reading, and I primarily read via audiobook. It's like surpassed. And so now I'm trying to
reverse
that, because I was getting to the point where reading was just a chore, you know, like, oh, I don't want to read. Isn't there an audiobook version of this? You know, and I'm like, wait a minute. Okay. Slow down.
I have caught myself doing that too. The book that's on my Kindle right now is actually, it's a cozy mystery from one of my author friends, and it's a first in series, and it's the series takes place in Alaska. And so we visited there the spring. Oh my God. So much has happened this year, but yeah. So that was the spring was my first time in Alaska. And she grew up there, so that's why she's setting the series there. But that was my first time, and I can hardly wait to go back. It's just absolutely amazing, stunning. They call it the last frontier, and that's a great tagline.
Yeah, I'd love to get up to Alaska someday. Yeah,
I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, I'm currently reading on audiobook, but this one you have to get the audio. It's Patrick Stewart's memoir. It's called Making It So. If you're familiar with Patrick Stewart, he narrates his own memoir, and it's just, I could listen to that man just talk about anything.
I bet. Yes, of course. The dark fantasy retelling that I was telling you about, he's a British writer. So the narrator is, of course, also British, and he does all these different voices. And man, his narrator does a spectacular job. Like, I honestly, I'm sure that's why he's having so much success in audio with it, because his narrator is fabulous. I could almost just listen to him do all the voices, just because it's so interesting and fascinating. Number one, that you can do all those. He does a like an old hag's voice. And then he'll go into this like young, you know, male. It's just fascinating to me. I'm jealous of.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Me too. And I was telling you, on my Christmas podcast, I'll often read a story, an old Christmas story or something. And I really enjoyed reading aloud, and I used to read aloud to my kids when they were younger.
Yeah.
And you know, you start thinking, boy, I would love to be an audiobook narrator. That'd be awesome. And then you hear such brilliant performances like that, and then you think, oh man, I'll never get there.
I was the same way. I was naive enough. Well, this is a lifetime ago. I thought, oh, I'm gonna do radio. I'm gonna be a radio broadcaster. So I went to broadcasting school for, I think I lasted about 6 months, and it was really interesting to go to. They teach you about all the different styles, because of course the different radio stations, you know, you're not going to, if you're going to be on a radio station that has a lot of shock jock type radio shows, you're not going to come in and say, so for our next set, we're going to play, you're not going to do that nice software, but narration, audio narration. I mean, that's acting.
Yeah.
And to create those characters, I tried just even trying to do like a low male voice. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a skill set, but I just enjoy reading, whether I'm reading aloud to somebody or to myself, you know, it doesn't matter. What I love is to see, you know, their interest and excitement, you know, when they catch on to the story, like you have, you know, it's just, oh, it's like, yeah, I'm going to share the joy.
There's an organization, and you can volunteer to tutor first graders. So they're 6 years old. And I guess studies have shown that if at first grade, you know, a child isn't reading at grade level, by third grade, they are not only are they just behind at whatever level that is, but they're behind exponentially and are something like 83% probable to fail, like the state reading test for that grade level. So they just keep falling behind. Mm-hmm. So this organization partners with corporations. And so the company that I work for pays us to volunteer 40 hours a year. And this is one of the organizations. So you do it over the computer. There's a whole like computer setup and there's all these different stories and there's different levels. So the teacher will tell you what level to start the student off on based on whatever evaluation that they've done. And they read to you. So they get to select the story and then you have the story on your screen as well. But on our screen, it shows the different words that they're learning versus the words that they should already know so that, you know, if they're struggling with words they should already know, you definitely don't want to move them up a level until they kind of master that. And not just reading the word itself, but also comprehension. So at the end of the story, there will be some questions that you can ask, like, oh, do you remember what, you know, what the first sport was that he, you know, Billy tried or something like that. And if they can recall it easily, sometimes it takes them a minute. They've got to go back and think. But, and it's just 30 minutes a week. But I tell you, it's the best 30 minutes to have a six-year-old read you a story. And after you start to see their confidence and their abilities and their skills increase week after week. And it's amazing how just 30 extra minutes of some dedicated time for them to read and have somebody help them or coax them. They train us with some little tools to use, you know, to help them through some of the tougher words. It's just the best 30 minutes a week. They have a little six-year-old reading to you is just the best.
That sounds lovely. Wow.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, that's just half an hour out of your time, and you're making such a big impact in somebody's life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, talking a little bit, going back to your book, so this is going to be an ongoing series you have planned?
It is, yep. I'm about 25% through book two in terms of writing the rough draft. Frankly, I'd hoped to be a little bit further by the end of the year, but I got sick for a couple of weeks and it set me back. But that's okay. I'm not on any kind of time frame. I'm hoping to release it the first half of next year. And then I'm not sure if three will come out next year. If it does, it'll be sort of around this time, towards the end of the year. And then I have 4, 5, and 6 planned. I traveled this year to a few locations, England, Ireland, and Paris for the stories. And so I'm super excited to write those, but I got to get through, you know,
right,
2 and 3, and they're going to be fun because Sam will be home for 2 and 3, but she'll start traveling again for 4, 5, and 6. And it will probably continue after that, but I have several other series ideas that are waiting. I've got their premise. And I've actually started world building for a cozy urban fantasy.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I dig that. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's a growing thing. And I guess really it's an urban fantasy that, you know, you're not going to have any profanity or really light, like PG-13 maybe. And, you know, no sex on the page and that kind of stuff. Right. It's just going to be adventure, quest. There might be a murder. But I'm having so much fun with that.
I like fantasy to a point. Some of the, you know, I don't know if they call it high fantasy or something, but you know what, the orcs and the elves and the trolls and all that. And the books are, you know, 15 book series of 500,000 pages each. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no thanks. I'll wait for the movie.
I think it's kind of like too with cozy. It's still in the cozy genre. So it's not these epic fantasies. I mean, I do have creatures in mind so far. I'm building that up, but it's still going to be in the cozy-ish world in terms of length of a novel. Mm-hmm. So maybe 60 to 80,000 words somewhere in there is my guess is where mm-hmm. it would end up.
Yeah.
This one is set for a trilogy. We're not like, I don't have any, who knows if it actually gets written, just depending sure. on how, if I, you know, you build out the world and of course that's the fun part, but, and I have an idea of what the plot would be in the overarching, but you know, it'll be very different than yeah. what, right? And, but at the same time, like the characters that I have sort of sketched out very much in the cozy vein. Mm-hmm. So very plucky, very can do, very, you know, very determined.
yeah. Getting into adventures they have no business being in, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
yep.
Absolutely.
No, that sounds like a lot of fun. I love the genre mix-ups like that. Those are some of my favorite stories to read, and it's always a hoot. But yeah, well, that sounds like you got some great future plans ahead.
I hope so.
When did you first want to become a writer, and how did that journey look for you?
So I've always been a storyteller, literally telling stories verbally. And when I was a kid, even a little kid, and I did write stories, but I wrote them, I think, just to get them out of my head. And so that people would, and when I say people, I mean my parents, would stop telling me, quiet. uh-huh. And then I think I was in junior high, and I don't remember why, but the entertainment section of the news, like the Sunday newspaper, printed an excerpt, and it was the script of a movie that was, I guess, being touted, but I was 12 and it wasn't a movie that I was probably going to be interested in, but it was going to be a television movie. And I think that's why it was such a big deal, because it was this very kind of deep, dark, dramatic thing. But I remember being fascinated by the script and mm-hmm. reading the script, the section that they printed in the paper, and thinking, this is what I want to do. I want to write this, because I would see my stories visually. And as I read the script, I could see how this was going to play out. I did finally see the movie, probably over the summer or something. And it was very similar to how I had pictured it in my head, that particular scene. Mm-hmm. And so I would start writing. I didn't know really anything about script writing. I just sort of copied the format that I had seen in the newspaper. And so I started writing my stories out in that manner. I would just put, instead of chapter and prose, I would just put a heading about where the characters were. And then it was just basically all dialogue, like 10 lines of dialogue and maybe one line of action or something if somebody did something. And I, not too long ago, well, no, I want to say this was probably a couple years ago, I ran across one of them. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know I still had this. Oh, the teen angst. Oh my God. It's thank God nobody was around to say, what are you reading? And can I, because I would have said no.
Nothing. Just closed it up.
But I really thought, oh, that this is what I want to do. But as you can tell, I have a tendency to be interested in a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And so from that point to the time I actually graduated high school, I think I also wanted to be a corporate lawyer, an actor, a truck driver, big rig truck driver, a Formula One race car driver, and a psychologist. None of which came to pass.
So, okay. So you're not hiding a big rig truck.
I am not, although okay. Let me tell you, my mom was not happy when I announced that one. My dad thought it was great. My mom says, no, you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
All she needed to do was wait 10 minutes. And of course I changed my mind.
Sounds about right. But
yeah. So, you know, and then life goes on. I jumped around. I would still write little stories if they came to me, because they would just come to me. And So anytime a story idea or a character came to me, I would write it down to see if it would flesh out into anything. Sometimes it did and sometimes it didn't. I did start writing scripts and I did go back to school. I would go in and out back and forth with college, but I finally finished my degree. And I decided that if I was going to finish my degree, I wanted it to be in radio, TV, film, since that's really where my heart was. And so I really thought, okay, then this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a go of it. And of course, by then I had been working for a long time and I thought, okay, great. I'm going to wait a year, save some money, and then I'll quit my job and I'll make a play for this, but I'll have, you know, knowing that it was going to take a while to even get my foot in anybody's door to do anything, even if it was just the mail cart. And that was 2008, and we know what happened. So I did not quit my job because I thought, oh no, this is not going to be a good idea. I'll wait a couple of years. Well, like anything, you know, you get re-involved in whatever is happening in your life. But sure. I did still continue to write. And so try to fast forward. In 2019, late summer, I want to say it was July and August time period, I woke up and Sam was in my head and just, I had seen what she saw, you know, as the character when she went into her aunt's art studio. It was dark. And she'd heard a scream, so she went running in, and her aunt was lying on the floor, and there's a dead man, you know, another man lying there. She doesn't know what's happening at first. Anyway, she sees the tattoo, and that just starts the whole thing spinning. And I thought, oh, that's okay, that's interesting. But it didn't seem like anything to me, so I didn't know where it would go. So I kind of ignored her for a few days, but every day it just came back and came back. So I thought, okay, I'll write it down because clearly it's in my head. Well, I started writing it down in a spiral notebook, which is how I write all my ideas down. And every day I was writing more and more down. And 2.5 months later, and a lot of hand cramps, I still was writing this down. And I thought, okay, well, so clearly I don't think this is a screenplay. I'm not sure what this is. And I'd never written a novel and didn't kind of know what I was getting into. But I just kept going. And our local library hosted NaNoWriMo. And they were doing a weekly write-in. And I thought, you know, maybe I should go do that. Maybe I'll kind of learn some stuff. And that was probably the best thing I did. There was lots of people there, but I met one woman. We kind of connected and became friends. And she had already published 3 books independently and was there working on her 4th. So when it ended, we thought, well, why don't we still meet up once a week and we can still do our own little writing sprints. And so we did, you know, we met at a Starbucks that was in between us, and she would start talking about, she would things like a reader magnet, and you know, I'd listen and smile, and then I'm all, so what is that? I don't know what that is. And so she would explain it to me, and I think, okay, I understand what that is, but I still didn't really know how to apply it because I was literally still just writing the draft. And so just little by little, we formed a critique group with some other cozy mystery writers. And the first time I submitted my chapter to be critiqued, and I wasn't unfamiliar with this process because we did it for screenwriting. And it's a super... it's one of the most beneficial processes you can go through to learn from. And the first thing that I realized is so in screenwriting, you write dialogue. There's not each scene can be a different person's point of view. You know, there's somebody's story that you're telling, but you can be all over the place. there's no single point of view that you have to stay in through the whole. I didn't know that writing about POV and first person or third person. Mm-hmm. And showing, not telling, not to the degree that I was doing. So there was a lot for me to learn. But that's, if you don't go through that and you get that feedback, you won't learn it. And thankfully I had fallen in with a stellar group of women, and we're still together. Mm. And so, but once I started going to Nano, and then I'm meeting up with the friend and then this larger group, that's when I realized this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I want to learn everything about it. I won't necessarily probably do everything, but at first I need to learn it, because if I get to the point where I could hire somebody to do marketing, if I don't understand some of the basics of marketing, that could really hurt me in the end, because if I'm not keeping an eye on budget, there's just so much.
Right.
I always wanted to sort of have my own business, if you will. And I also wanted to have creative pursuit. And man, this just hits all those check boxes like crazy. Yeah. Making stories, making worlds. I mean, honestly, it just doesn't really get any better than that.
Right. Yeah, and you can kind of pursue what story you want to tell. There's a reason, but you know, editors and agents will say, "Well, that's not going to sell. How about you write, you know, this?" It's like, "Well, I don't want to write that though."
Well, that's so true, but so I mean, I have a couple of editors that mm-hmm. apart from the critique group, which sort of acts as a content editor. But I had two other editors, and she was great. And she told me, you know, you hinted at this, but then it never plays out. Mm-hmm. So you may want to think about either adding something at the end that hints that that's the thing, or if it's not a thing, then maybe lessen it, you know, up front, so that it's not sort of telegraphing as possible love interest. Right. And I thought, oh, kind of, you forget some of the things that you do. And, you know, when you're writing, even though you reread your own work and we listen to it too, you fill in the gaps, because you know in your head mm-hmm. what you're expecting to happen books ahead. Right. And, you know, but having somebody read it as a reader and also as an editor, you get fabulous feedback. So I did. I went in and I changed the ending, and it definitely made it better. I think it filled it out so much more, and it gave me an opportunity to tease out a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a cliffhanger, but, you know.
Yeah, like threads a little, for... Yeah. Future stories. Yeah. 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 I have heard so much about from others, just the value of writing in a group like that, of having not just an editor, but, you know, your friends, a group, just helping each other out. It sounds like it's just a must have.
I'll tell you, that would be, if I gave one piece of advice, mm-hmm. there's probably three pieces, maybe five, but if somebody said you can give one piece of advice and that's it, that would be what I would give. Find a group of people, doesn't have to, you know, within your genre mm-hmm. to have a critique group with, because you want them to be different levels. You don't want everybody to be starting out at the same time. Like our group, we had people, I mean, there was me who'd never, you know, literally off the boat, and others who had written one, or there was one gal, she'd actually been writing for a few years she'd been writing fan fiction, and that was extremely popular. Mm-hmm. She's writing in somebody else's world and decided that she wanted to write her own stories. And she had also been in the 80s, she had been a writer in the writer's room for several very popular 80s sitcoms. And also had to learn when she started writing the fan fiction, what a change that was, you know, to write between screenplays and books. So we had a whole range of writers and on different areas in their journey and knowledge. So that made it even better. Mm-hmm. And I would say in with regard to critique groups, you know, if you fall into one and it doesn't, like, you're not feeling the vibe, it doesn't sit well with you, leave. Mm-hmm. Find another group. Now, if you're leaving because you don't like what they're saying, because it is hard to hear, you've poured yourself into this, but you have to go into knowing it. There's a way to give a critique, right? You don't, mm-hmm. you don't say, this is really bad.
This is garbage.
But it is, you know, when, because they start to get to know your characters too. So they might say, I'm not sure that's something that Sam would do. I feel like she's being too passive. And that was one of the critiques on one of the chapters. And they said, I don't think she would just sit back and be okay with that happening, with them saying that. She would be in their face about it. And there was a reason why I had her sitting, like, not reacting, mm-hmm. but it wasn't flying. Mm. So it meant that I had to rethink that. So even though in my head, I knew why she was going to do that. If it didn't resonate with the reader, then it doesn't matter what I think.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You really have to write kind of like with your reader in mind, you know, mm-hmm. realizing they're not going to understand everything. You know, I can just think
it's
about
in
it.
Your head.
It's in my head. I can think about it. It's quick, but no, I got to sometimes, but then you don't want to overspell things out because then, you know, the author thinks, hey, you're treating me like a moron, you know?
It's not necessarily spelling things out. You definitely don't want to treat your reader like they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you do want to be true to the character and how the reader perceives them. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things a lot of folks will ask me, like, oh, well, like, what's the hook for your story? And I'm all, well, I mean, honestly, solving the mystery and the way she solves it. Because I think people have gotten into the habit of thinking, oh, if you're writing a cozy mystery, there has to be like a craft kind of a hook or a culinary hook or a pet hook, mm-hmm. or, you know, exotic location like Alaska hook, which that's a hook in itself. But honestly, I think the relationships in a lot of mysteries are the hook. She uses all of her past. She works a lot of different jobs since she travels so much. So she'll bring in a lot of those different, you know, skill sets or what she learned from one job mm-hmm. to the next and the thing. As a matter of fact, the reader magnet that I wrote takes place in England. And so I made a reference to it in this book about mm-hmm. making tea. And I had gotten the information backwards. So I wrote it in, you know, the story and everything. And she makes a comment. Well, one of my ARC readers caught it. So thank goodness.
Yeah.
Said, oh, no, you've got this wrong about the tea. This is how you brew a proper cup of tea. And I thought, oh, my God, thank you so much for catching that. So I could easily go in. I hadn't submitted it anywhere yet, but I could go in and make that change.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic to get feedback. Honestly, it's just one of the best ways to make your story better. And sometimes the feedback you get, my mom doesn't like the fact that the word giggle is in there. Uh-huh. And so she'll make sure to tell me, she's like, I don't know. I mean, giggle, that's like for little girls. And I think, Mom, people giggle. And this is a cozy mystery, but she reads true crime. Oh. She reads thriller, action thrillers and stuff. So you are not going to have giggling people, right, in those stories, but in a cozy mystery, I said, Mom, if you read, she only reads my stories in the cozy mystery genre. I don't think she's read anything else that's cozy mystery.
Right.
And I said, honestly, I promise you, if you read any other cozy mystery with a young girl in it, there's giggles.
That's right. Hey, you know, Jack Reacher doesn't giggle. Come on.
No, he does not giggle. He does not giggle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
So sometimes you have to take some of the feedback and think, okay, where does that come from?
Right.
And she's right for her that giggling doesn't make sense, but she doesn't read the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have to think too. Now, granted, you wouldn't necessarily know that from a reader, like what they normally read, but you do have to kind of take some of that into consideration. Like you don't want to overthink all of the feedback, but right. Take the feedback that makes sense to you and then make it better. Cause it's free.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Free feedback.
And, you know, it's, I don't, I like this idea that there's a community of people behind you, you know, that are helping you get your story out and, answer the questions you don't know, you know, filling in those gaps. It's just got to be a positive experience overall.
Well, and I think too, a lot of people, they don't even realize that they can create a community, because otherwise when you're writing, it is a pretty solitary activity. I don't mind it because I'm in my head so much when I'm writing, because you've got all the characters and you're not really alone. And I promise I'm not crazy. Not the crazy person. But you do want to have some interaction, even if it's just to talk about your struggle. Like, I'm, especially when you're transitioning from one scene to the next or one act to the next. And, you know, if you have somebody that can just kind of bounce ideas off of, like, or just motivation. Sometimes you just, you know, if you're not feeling well. I've had a hard time getting back into a daily writing habit, especially since I was sick. I didn't write at all. Mm. And now it's like, oh, okay, let's write some more. Let's write some more. I got to get back into that habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start setting up, hey, you want to sprint? Even though you're not really talking, you're just writing together over Zoom, but you hold each other accountable. And so having that community is so helpful. And you realize, you're not in it alone. You don't have to go through all of that yourself.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we're in this together. We're facing the same battle, the same challenges. Let's, you know, get this story done. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you kind of mentioned you might have a couple more just words of advice you would give to writers. Anything off the top of your head you'd share with them?
Yeah, you know, so depending on what stage a writer might be in, because if you're in the writing stage, you know, definitely any craft, if you need help with craft, there's so many good craft books. But if you start to get towards the end and you're ready, the critique group for sure. And if you're doing the indie route, because I mean, that's the route that I'm doing, you definitely want to, you know, if you need to save your money, you want a good cover. So spend a little bit. You can get a really good cover for a couple hundred dollars or even less.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to, you know, spend $1,000, but also get some editing, get a professional editor and a professional proofreader. If you spend your money on those two things, you'll look professional. You'll have a good story to tell, and you'll have a good, you know, you'll have a good professional product to present to the world. And then after that, it's just going to depend on, you know, everybody has a slightly different journey, but you will eventually need to learn a little, you know, some basics about marketing. And there's so many resources out there for that. And if anybody's out there and they're looking for a large community that they can then find a smaller community, 20 books to 50K is an excellent group. I think it's like 75,000 now on Facebook group. Self-Publishing Formula is out of the UK, but they have a global audience as well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you're looking for more traditional routes, you can, whether you're male or female, you can actually join Sisters in Crime if you're mystery. But mm-hmm. So just look for those groups that resonate with you and join them to find that community that you can make your own. And yeah. Also get information, because that's really, these are the people that you're going to learn from.
Yeah. And it can be hard, you know, getting feedback, getting critique, but if you have the right ones, like you said, they'll be able to do it yeah. in a way that is positive.
Yes.
And, you know, if they're just cutting you down, then that's because they're a bad person. It's not you.
No.
Yeah.
And especially if you're just in a general critique group where maybe one author is fantasy and you've got sure. three authors that are romance and then some that are like noir or mystery, and you're trying to write a cozy mystery, you're not going to get the right kind of feedback. And right. none of that feedback, some of it might be okay, the general feedback about maybe point of view or voice. But in terms of how you structure that particular type of genre story, the types of things, it won't be appropriate for you. And you'll just, I think, probably feel a little confused and maybe disheartened. So getting into a genre specific, I think, is key to that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you start with your local library, check out what they have there. We have a library that does a writing group about once a
nice.
Month or so. And yeah, they just teach basics of writing and things. And my wife's gone a few times and has really enjoyed it.
Oh,
you know, they get learn a writing style, and then they have a writing prompt and they'll just write a short story or something and share it. Yeah. Doesn't have to be complicated.
I love a writing prompt. Does your wife write?
No. Well, I mean, just for fun.
Okay.
And I think it's something she wants to do at some point. But she's working on a master's degree right now. So that's kind of.
Oh, okay.
It's
yeah
that's kind of where her brain is right now, but she's yeah. you know, has to write papers and things for that
yeah
she's really enjoying. But yeah it's you know, well, and she works part-time at the library, so
nice.
Yeah, she enjoys that work and being going back to the beginning. I mean, she gets to read to kids at the library, so so yep. there you are. Yeah.
Yeah, if I didn't work during the day, our library has all kinds of story time. I always think, oh, gosh, that would be kind of fun to go do. Mm. Yeah, I love libraries. I publish wide so that I can be in libraries. And because mm-hmm. When I was a kid, that's what we did. We went to the library, and like the summer programs where you yep. could, you know, check out all these books, and you get to fill out the little cards and you'd see yeah. how many books you read and you'd
dominate those really contests. Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved those when I was a kid.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, when I was in school, the only time I could read was during summer. Mm. And that's how I actually started listening to, it was Audible wasn't out back then, I don't think, or if it was, I wasn't aware of it, but I would go to the library and check out books on CD. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I'm remote now, but I had a commute to and from work. So I would listen in the morning on the way to work, listen in the afternoon on the way to work. And then on the weekends, I could read the book, the physical book. Mm-hmm. And so that way I could get through at least a few books before I had to start back to school, because I was working full time and going to school. So very limited time for reading for pleasure.
Yeah. It sounds like you've learned all the hacks and tricks to reading a lot. So we're dealing with a professional here.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, I do what I can. I actually still watch TV. It's not like I,
yeah,
you know, and all the mysteries too, you know, Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, love that show. Yeah.
God, and hardly wait. It's like I blow through those 10 episodes and I'm like, oh, now I gotta wait another year.
Right. Yeah, come on.
I know, right? And there's so many, there's a lot of good stuff on streaming anymore and limited series. I don't even have time to watch all of those. I keep thinking, okay, I'll eventually get to it. I'll get to it. But
yeah, I've got a long list of things I need to watch, but then I'm like, oh, look, a book. Yeah, I'm going
to
read that.
I know. Or I'll think to myself, okay, but if you're going to watch that, maybe you should write first. So I have started doing this little thing where if I realize I'm not, like, especially if a couple of days has gone by and it's, I'm not writing mostly because I'm just watching TV, I will tell myself, okay, before you watch TV, these are, you know, the games like you play with your kids. Yeah. Before you watch TV, write for 30 minutes and then you can watch your program.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then of course, once you sit down, once I sit down to write, an hour and a half goes by and then, you know, no problem.
I know you have a website and things. Where can people find you?
Yeah, it's AnnSeidelAuthor.com is the website. I do have a Facebook page. I'm not as good as posting out there as I should be. I try to post every now and then. So that's also just Ann Seidel Author on Facebook. And then I do have a TikTok, but I'm probably what you would call a TikTok fail. So I'm also trying to get a little bit better, but that's Ann Seidel underscore writes.
Yeah, I tried out TikTok and haven't been on in ages. So I never know how much of the social media helps with driving people to your podcast and all that. So I don't know. It's just like I said, I'm trying different things and seeing what I enjoy doing. So, but yeah, it was great chatting with you tonight. And
it was lovely chatting with you as well.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing how your series plays out. So the book's available now.
It is available now. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. I mean, it's available everywhere. All paperbacks right. are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and if you're in Australia, Booktopia.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. Yeah, I wish I was in Australia.
I know, right? And it's also available in libraries. So the cloud library for ebooks. So, yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, Ann, thanks again for coming on.
You.
And you have you take care.
Thanks, you too.
All right.
Stay healthy.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. You can check out the show notes to find out all the information, links, and books that we referenced in today's episode. If you'd like to help support the show, I'd love for you to share on your social medias, tell your bookworm friends, and help us get the word out. If you'd like to help out in a financial way, there are links in the show notes. We can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com. You can find all episodes at bookshelfodyssey.com. And please follow us on my social medias. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Follow us there for more bookish content. And so until next time, happy reading, everyone, and take care.